Blog Talk Radio.
You got to get up every morning with a smile on your face and show the world all the love in your heart. Then people gonna treat you better. You're gonna find, yes you will, that you're beautiful as you feel.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to You Are Important to Sarah. I have a great guest on today, the Jollyologist. I mean, that name alone is so much fun. Alan Klein is going to join us in a few minutes, and he's going to talk to us about the importance of laughter, the importance of lifting up those spirits and overcoming those dulls, those woes, those miseries with the wonderful gift of laughter. My personal thoughts on it first is... I'm British, so of course everything is the very dry sense of humor, the double entendres. I'm not really into slapstick humor. Sometimes I find it a little embarrassing, and that could be me, could be my age. But I do love it when you have those innuendos, those comments that are made that could be double-sided. And I love very, what I call intelligent humor. I love The Big Bang. I think it is brilliantly written. It has wonderful sense of humor and timing. It is extraordinary. The lines that you can learn and their delivery is absolutely fantastic. But I do know very, very much the importance of laughter. And, you know, sometimes we just reach that screaming point, that point we want to tear our hair out. We're so absolutely frustrated. We're angry. We're upset. We're on the verge of tears if we're not already crying, and then a little kid will come and do something, or the cat or the dog will start chasing something, and all of a sudden you just find yourself giggling, or, you know, tears and laughter at the same time. But whatever it is, it's taking you outside of that moment, out of that frustration. And I think every time that we get into those moments, those despairs, those things that we feel so utterly trapped by, we need to deliberately go and put ourselves into a place where it's going to lift our spirits, be amongst people that are uplifting. Laughter is the most beautiful music. It is exquisite when you hear it coming from a child. Why do you think they go and put on these ads of all these babies laughing and laughing and laughing? And they get into such laughter, they just, it's like on a loop. And you can't help but smile or laugh along with them because it's contagious and it sells the product. But basically what we're buying is that beautiful laughing baby and how innocent and wonderful it feels, and we want to get back to that. So that's why that laughter is so utterly important to us. And it is important for us to put ourselves amongst people that are humorous, that are see the lighter aspects of life. And, you know, we don't want to be around misery because misery loves company. So if you really want to get out of those doldrums, you need to be around those people that are going to be uplifting and do find that sense of humor in life. If you have been diagnosed with an illness, and I know how overbearing it can be, I know how that it can feel like it's a sentence, and the domino effects that can go on in your emotions after that. But maybe you need to take a step out of it. Get out of the whole situation and kind of look at yourself from the side as that person was diagnosed with XYZ. It doesn't define who that person is. It just means that person over there has this XYZ issue, the problem. What can they do about it to make that person get well again? That positive attitude, looking to the possibilities, looking to a solution, not giving up, not giving in, not laying down and dying. Looking for a way to find that reason to live and going about it. Step outside of yourself sometimes, folks. Go and put yourself among people that are happy. And then your situation, whatever it is, and I know if you've been given the big C, automatically you think that's a death sentence. And no, it does not have to be. There are so many things for cancer today that are non-invasive. There are so many people being cured from it today. You do not have to lay down and die. You can find your solutions, you can find your possibilities, and you know you can do this, first and foremost, by finding something to laugh about. And I know there's some people out there, but cancer isn't a laughing matter. Why don't we make it a laughing matter? Why don't we make all of these things a laughing matter? Why do we give in to the drama of the disease? Why do we do that? I know that you've just been given something that's going to be overwhelming, but if you buy into the overwhelmingness of it, it's going to bring your immune system down. It's going to bring your entire psyche down, your whole vibration and your frequency down. And you are now allowing that disease to actually take more hold of you. And if you choose to look up and you choose to be on the sunny side of the street and you fight to find that happiness around you, putting happy people around you, making sure laughter and great music is around you, you will elevate your entire frequency and your vibration, giving your body a chance to fight for its own survival. Now, we're going to be talking about all sorts of subjects today, and just before we came on the air, we decided we would like to hear from you, which is the song that makes you feel happy. For me, it's the Bobby McFarlane one, Don't Worry, Be Happy. You know, when life gets you down, just pick yourself back up. When I was pregnant with my third daughter, I would go around singing this all the time with my other two little kids behind me, doing their silly little dances, and we'd be singing this song. And it was always so utterly pleasing. So if you've got a song that lifts you up and makes you feel light and smile at life, do call in. We're giving away a couple of books today, Learning to Laugh When You Feel Like Crying, and I'm sure this can help quite a number of you through some hard times. Phone in with either a question or what your song is, or maybe the joke that you think is absolutely juicy and will get us all laughing. For now, I am going to bring on Alan. Hello, Alan, Mr. Jollyologist. How are you today?
Good morning, good morning. You want people to sing, right? I'm great.
Yeah,
how are you?
You can listen to an operatic thing even the other way. Okay, I'm doing great today. So I think that humor is extremely important in life. And I know that you came about it, well, you probably always were a funny person, but it was actually your wife that is the one that set you on this road of using humor to heal or to enlighten. Isn't that right?
Yes, and it came out of a not-so-great time. We were told she had a terminal liver disease, and there was no cure. There were no liver transplants at the time, and she had a great sense of humor. And it just really helped us lift us up. There were a lot of tears, but it helped us lift us up for 3 years that she had the terminal illness. Give you one example. She was in the hospital with a copy of Playgirl magazine with the male nude centerfold. And she said, Alan, hey, I really like this picture this month. Can you put it on the wall by the bed over there? And I said, Alan, this is a hospital. A little risque for that. And she said, well, maybe you're right. She said, why don't you get a leaf from the plant over there and cover up, you know, that part. And I did that. And, Sarah, things are fine for the first day, fine for the second day. But by the third day, the leaves start shriveling up. And you can get the picture. And, you know, we came home from the hospital, and we would just look at a leaf or a plant, and we would start to laugh. And I realized, looking back, it wasn't a lot of laughter. It was 5 or 10 seconds. But it helped us rise above the situation, gave us a reprieve, gave us that perspective that humor always does on the situation. And so after she passed, I went on to, gave up a business, went on to learn about the therapeutic value of humor. It was Norman Cousins talking about how it helped him heal. And I went on and got a master's degree in human, H-U-M-A-N development. And my thesis was The Healing Power of Humor, which turned into my first book.
And you've had, what, 17 of them since then?
17, 18, and 19 will be out this year, and 20 will be out next year.
So you're really spreading the humor around there, which is fabulous.
Spreading the word, yes.
Right. I do know that, you know, when anybody is down, you know, like your entire vibration is down, and, you know, misery does love misery, and we're inclined to, when we're feeling down, to wear dark colors, you know, stay inside, watch something miserable, and that, you know, it's so hard to get out of when you get into that situation. And that I think, you know, if you have friends, guys, that are going through something, whether they like it or not, get them laughing at something. You know, a movie, you know, a song, a dance, you know, out for lunch where, as you said, there's, you know, Mr. Playboy serving you. Doing something that can lift you up, because that raising of that vibration is your healing factor. And if we don't do something...
I love what you just said, because sometimes people, you know, they're not in the mood to laugh or smile, but one of the things, I have a whole collection of very bright ties. And it just, when I wear a bright tie, one, it brings me up, but then it connects with other people because they start commenting on the tie. And then sometimes my ties have stories, so it's a way of connecting. But it also brings other people up. And I remember one man in my class was pretty down, one of my workshops. And we talked about wearing a bright tie. And he came in the next day with what I would think is a very dull tie, but for him was a bright tie. And it just said it really lifted his spirits. And he said, you know, but I'm a dentist. I can't do that. People, you know, looking at me all the time. I can't wear a very bright tie. I said, how about wearing bright underwear? You know, nobody will know, and they'll wonder why you have that smile on your face all the time.
Exactly. I very much believe in color therapy, and that, you know, wearing color does elevate you. And I know the difference with me. Like, sometimes if I'm doing a workshop, I will stay to the beiges because, you know, I'm trying to raise everybody else's elevation and mine can be get a little too much. But for me personally, I'm a colorful girl. I love the deep oranges and the you know, the fuchsia pinks and the vibrant blues. And whenever I do wear those, it's not, you know, people go, oh, I love that outfit. It's just, oh, I love that color on you, because they know that it lifts me up and it lifts them up, and that domino effect of it. And, you know, and another thing is tone of voice, isn't it? How inviting are we to other people to share any humor or solution with by our tone of voice?
One other thing, you know, when you don't feel like laughing, at least try smiling. Because there's all research now about smiling and how that helps our immune system when we're smiling. And it's an international, you know, you don't have to know a joke. You don't have to tell a joke. You don't have to get a laugh from a joke. You just smile with someone else. They smile back. You are connecting and you are lifting yourself up. As simple as that.
That's the kind of my song, you know, the beginning of the show there. You've got to get every morning with a smile on your face and show the world all the love in your heart. And it's amazing how a smile can beget another smile that can beget another smile, because I'm very much into train reaction or, you know, the domino effect. And it's like if we put ourselves, sometimes, as I say, you do have to step outside of yourself, you know.
Speaking about songs, and I love Broadway shows. I grew up on them growing up in New York City, but... there's a song from Annie, you know, that show and movie, called You Never Fully Dress Without a Smile.
Exactly. Precisely.
Which I love.
There's so many. But, you know, you've seen the commercial ads of all these babies just laughing. One baby after the other laughing. And it is so contagious. You know, you have to smile. You have to laugh along with them, because it is so contagious. And I think
the other thing you talk about ads on TV. If you notice, I'd say 8 out of 10 ads have some humor in them, because they want to get you to laugh and remember the product.
Right.
You know, laughter is a way of bonding with other people. And they're spending millions of dollars to get you to laugh so you remember their product.
Remember how you felt looking at that ad, so therefore the product's going to make you feel that way.
Right, exactly. So if marketers are spending millions of dollars to help you, to try to get you to laugh and smile, they know to buy their product, they know how beneficial it is monetarily wise. But it's also scientific has proven that every system in your body gets to work out when you have a good hearty laugh. I'm sure your listeners all know it's a relaxer when you're laughing, because you know when you laugh so hard, sometimes what happens, you relax your muscles, Sarah, and you pee in your pants.
Yeah, exactly. Then you laugh about that one, you know. I've had a few stories myself which perhaps aren't suitable for on air, but believe me, there was embarrassing moments that you could have absolutely died over, or instead, you know, you just laugh, because what else can you do, you know?
It's that physically it's really good for you, because it helps your body relax. You know, we're also stressed out these days. Yes. Laughter is a great muscle relaxer, among other things.
Yes, yes, it is. I mean, you're spent afterwards, aren't you? You know, your body just feels so much more relaxed. Even your lungs
with a
great workout. Your brain's had a good workout. Everything about you is just like,
yeah. Well, what they're showing is that when you laugh, good hearty laugh, the air can go out of your. They've done studies. Air can go out of your mouth at 70 miles an hour when you have a good hearty laugh. And then you have to breathe heavily, so you're getting a lot of fresh air in. Sometimes you cough after a good laugh, so you're getting congestion up. I mean, there's all these physical things that laughter can do, as well as the psychological, to help us rise above our situations.
Yeah, we've actually got somebody coming on, actually, in the next couple of months, and she's going to be actually teaching the power of breath awareness. And it's actually, you know, being aware of that breathing. And part of that in there is, you know, is the breathing of joy, kind of. You know, the interesting thing is it's the silly things that make us laugh, isn't it? I mean, you know, I'm not, you know, no offense, but I'm not into the big comedian thing. Because, you know, for me, a lot of the time, some of those comedians go overboard and it's a little too, I don't know, degrading.
I agree with you, Sarah. People say, oh, you're into you and you probably go to a lot of comedy clubs. Well, I don't, because often it's very offensive.
Yes.
They're using foul language. They're putting people down. So there's, you know, there's humor has a double-edged sword. There's that kind of humor where you could, because you're feeling not so great about yourself, you put other people down so you do feel better. But that's not healthy. What I'm talking about is looking for the humor that is all around us. Because indeed, one example, I was in a laundromat recently and I looked on the wall and it said, when the machine stops, remove all your clothing. And which I did. But you know, the point is, Sarah, there is humor all around us.
There is.
And
it's the willing to make fun of yourself. You know,
sure.
You know, my son teases me all the time because I have a partial dyslexia, so very often I'll go see things inside out, upside down, back to front. And, you know, he thinks it's really funny. Or I'll quote a movie or a song and I'll get it completely wrong. And if I'm anywhere near right, so kudos for Mum. And so they're always making fun of me. But he always ends up getting me cracking up. You know, the whole face crunch, you know, holding up the breath, the tears coming down. Because, you know, the fun is not derogatory. It's just, you know, making one laugh at oneself. And I think we have
to... Well, that's what I do. You know, your listeners can't see me, but I'm practically totally bald. And my father was as bald as I am. It's where I inherited it from. And he would get very upset if you said he was bald. I mean, it was quite obvious. So I tell people I'm a former expert in how to cure baldness. You know, I just poke a little fun at myself. I'm very comfortable with being bald, making jokes about being bald. And so the thing about humor, if you can poke fun at yourself before anyone else can, you've gotten the upper hand. Once you've done it, no one else could, like, top that. They've done it. You know, you've done it. You're comfortable with that.
But
so humor is a great way to cope
you.
With things that you don't like.
Yeah, and it makes people feel comfortable around you if you're able to do that for yourself. It's not an invitation, but it means that you're not uptight. You know how you go walking into a store and you've got one person that's just, you know, oh, my God, you know, why are they serving me? And it can affect your day. And that you can walk into somebody else and maybe they've just had a catastrophe. Everything's dropped or anything else, and then everybody in the restaurant starts clapping because they've just gone and broken 20 dishes. Instead of making it an uptight thing, it's bravo. Well, you know, how many next time? Make light of it.
It lightens up the situation. Sure. And you know, we take ourselves too seriously all the time.
It's why we're so stressed out. And I'm just going to post the number for everybody again for those that are listening.
Oh, great.
So all of them. It's 1-877-296-0345. That's 1-877-296-0345. callers with a question, a song, a joke. You'll get one of his Learning to Laugh When You Feel Like Crying books. And even if you think you've got it all, if you've got that book to pass on to somebody else who really needs it, you could be making someone's day. So call in, folks. Okay.
Right, and so, I should just say the book is about embracing life after loss and has five stages of going from loss to laughter. It's my latest book, and those stages are losing, learning, letting go, living, and then, of course, laughing. So it's a very helpful book for anyone who has lost anyone in their life and who hasn't,
Yeah, but what I find so very sad, and I come across this a great deal, is people who have lost people, and then they die along with them, you know, especially if people have lost a child. Unfortunately, you know, they're guilt of outliving that child. They just start crumbling away, and then they forget they have other children, or that, you know, the last thing their child or their spouse would want was for them to curl up and die along with them. And it's, you know, I find that the permission to go through grief and the permission to laugh again, and that is what is survival is about, what life is about, and that the people that have passed over don't want you to curl up along with them, want you to get out there and live that life.
You know, you are so right. I've done, for my other book, The Courage to Laugh and the Healing Power of Humor, I interviewed people and I asked that specific question: how would you like your loved one to remember you? And I would say 9 out of 10, or most people said, how would you want to remember them? And most people said, I would want to remember the happier times, the times we laughed together, the times we had a good time together. And yet people go around, you know, forgetting that and remember all the that they've lost rather than celebrating a life that they had together.
And, you know, really, folks, we're all here on borrowed time, and it's what we do with that time that counts. And, you know, if we've left people behind but that, you know, loved us and we served a purpose, that is wonderful. And, if give them permission to remember you for all the good and all the joy that you brought. And, you know, it isn't, as I say, curling up and dying with them, because that doesn't serve their purpose in life, nor does it serve yours. You know, when I go, I say to my children, I want to be cremated. I want a rip-roaring party to celebrate my life. And then I want them to take
I want to be invited.
Oh, good, good. Well, you know, I'm intending to live for a long time. So, you know, I hope you're around in country.
Oh, maybe I won't be around.
well, then you'll come in spirit, right? But, you know, I'm saying to them, when you go to the top of the mountain, is, you know, to throw those ashes into the wind, you know, over the sea and let the wind take me. And I'm telling them not to do a monster.
What you're really talking about is what people focus on in their life. Do you know, do you focus on the life that's lost or the life that still exists, which is yours and your kids and your others, you know, maybe your spouse or whoever it is, your friends? And I'm reading a book myself right now called The Happiness Advantage. And he talks about listing, now he says 5, but you can do 3 things that bring you joy every day, or 3 things that have brought you pleasure, you know, at the end of the day, that day. You know, we forget to focus on those, particularly when we lose someone. We focus on the negative rather than the positive. And there's just so many positive things around us.
I think it demeans the person's life if you've chosen only to live in the moment of their passing and not into the celebration of the life and what it meant to you. Because, you know, we don't want to leave our loved ones behind in misery. We want to know that we were part of the equation of life that made them enjoy life. And by living in the misery of them passing, I think we're doing a dishonor to what they hopefully gave as a life, joy.
And that is, you know, that is what I realized after my wife died, who died at the age of 34, and we had a 10-year-old child. But I realized, how would my wife want me to continue living? Because she was so joyous, and we had such a, we would laugh a lot together. And how would she want us, or me, to bring up our child, you know, to be sad all the time, or to celebrate my wife's life and be joyous and continue the joy that she brought and that she brought to other people and to us. So that's how I got into the humor part. It was kind of a legacy that she left me that I now share with the world.
That's the thing, is we all want to leave a legacy. We want to leave something behind that made our life count for something. And if you can only remember somebody basically in misery, you know, or you're so miserable. I mean, it's wonderful if you're very sad that we've gone. But at the same time, we don't want you giving up our lives for us. We want to know that our impact, our joy of life, our energy, our positive outlook has given you the tools and given you the inspiration to go and live that life for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not doing anybody a disservice by dishonoring the value of yourself.
Right.
And, you know, it comes again around people who are ill. You know, it's people start pussyfooting around people that are become ill. And again, I think that is kind of, I don't feed the pain or the drama. For me, it's like, let's feed the solution. What is going to help you recover faster? And if you want to be part of that vision for someone, start doing something for them that's going to be part of the recovery and not, oh, you poor thing. Right?
You know, there's
it's
an interesting interesting study. I do a lot of work in bringing humor and laughter and relieve of stress with humor to hospice workers. And I discovered a study a number of years ago of hospice patients. And 80% of the people they interview, the patients they interview, now these are terminally ill patients, 80% they said they wanted more humor in their life that's left. They wanted the family to lighten up. And when they found that patients did that, the communication was easier. You know, but everybody tiptoes around and walks on eggshells around patients. And here, coming from the patient, they wanted people to lighten up around them because people get way too heavy.
You know, make their exit something, you know, that counts. You know, it's... I know, you know, a lot of people say, oh, it's a touchy subject. No, it's only a touchy subject because we avoid it, and we need to learn to listen.
Right. And we don't think that, okay, you've lost a loved one, there should be no laughter. Well, the latest study came out last year. It's in a book called The Other Side of Sadness. Talks about, and this is a two-year study, they studied people that have lost a loved one, and they found those survivors that had some humor and laughter after the loss did so much better after a two-year period than those that did not.
Right. And you know, you've got to remember all the other people that are left behind as well. And, you know, you owe that laughter and the celebration of the person you've lost to the person that has gone and to the people that are still around you. I'm going to have to, we've only got 1 minute left here, sir. Alan, we didn't get any callers in, but I'm going to tell my, often this is listened, downloaded to people afterwards because of the time of day. So anybody that emails me at Sarah, S-A-R-A, at theimportanceofyou, remember that's the letter U, .ca, Sarah, at theimportanceofyou.ca. It's on my site if you forget that. The first two people that email me after hearing this show, we will make sure that we get a book to you, okay? Because I know a lot of listeners come from later in the day. And I thank you so much, Alan, for being on the show. I really hope people truly take this to heart, that humor really is one of the best cures. And so keep making people laugh out there. I love it. It's fantastic. And thank you so much for being on the
show. Thank you, Sarah. It's been whizzed by really quickly.
Yes, it has. Take care, love, and keep singing.
I will. Goodbye, goodbye,
thanks.
Goodbye.
Toodaloo. Next week I have Kathy. This lady is amazing. She's been 20 years in Rwanda working with children, the orphanage kids. She feeds them, clothes them, teaches them, gives them a chance at life, helps young mothers with their new babies. We're going to look upon this as trying to raise some funds for her, raise some awareness for her. Please, folks, do tune in next week. This is a story that affects the world. Have a wonderful week. Blessings to everybody. And remember to get out there and sing and dance and laugh at the world. Bye for now.